in Boston and throughout all six New England states. This is Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1 Lawrence Boston. An Odyssey station. This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI. Let's get it going. This is Late Night. Right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
That's right. It is WEI Late Night. Thanks to Brian Baird for the lead-in. It's 10:01 here. I'm here till midnight. My name is Tyler Devitt. Round three, I believe, in this time slot for me. You know, on the other side of the glass tonight here producing in the late night shift, it's Brian DeFelice. Hello, Brian. How you doing?
Good, Tyler. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. So I was actually going to tell the audience a little behind the scenes, like, you know, peel back the curtain type of inside radio stuff here on Late Night. I actually had no idea I was doing this shift Thursday night and Red Sox Review Friday until 3:30, 4 p.m. Eastern with Mutt live on the air as the producer, Nick LaPan, told me, hey, you're hosting the next three nights. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm in. I'll do it. I'm a yes man. I'll say yes to every shift. I don't care if it's 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. I will be here. It may not be the greatest show, but I will get here. I'm going to make sure the building doesn't burn down and we get all the commercial breaks in. So that'll make Ken Laird and Chris Curtis happy about that.
Yeah, you sound like a natural, Tyler.
I'm here until midnight. I'm taking your calls at 617-779-7937. Starting with the Red Sox, of course, they are the hottest team in town. The number one topic in town in terms of talk. And it's funny, I actually don't get a whole lot of chances, Brian, to listen to the opponents, the Felger and Mass program. They were on 98.5 this afternoon. And, of course, the Red Sox pregame show started about 3:05, so I had a very short program with OMF. So we were off the air, and I got a chance to flip the dial to the opponents, the competition. And it was unbelievable the way they were talking about this Red Sox team, that nobody's interested. The NBA Finals game last night drew a better rating. The Euro Cup's drawing better ratings than the Red Sox. And it's unbelievable the mental gymnastics that the people who do not own the Red Sox radio rights are jumping to convince the radio listening audience here in Boston that the Red Sox are not a hot commodity. I don't know how you can even argue that. This team is so fun. They're resilient. I know they went 3-3 on this West Coast trip, but to be honest, the way they're kind of beat up right now, they had a really short bench today. It was just Connor Wong, the backup catcher. So you didn't really have anyone to place at the bottom of the lineup. I heard some guys to Brian Baird basically say that Bobby Dalbec shouldn't be on the roster or shouldn't be, he should be replaced. That first base is a major hole, a major red flag going forward. Well, I don't really disagree with that. I don't think that there's really any better options in terms of replacements at the bottom of the lineup, which quite frankly hasn't been producing, but there is time for Chaim Bloom to correct the small holes. They're not big holes on this team. They're small holes, and it's currently the American League's best team. This Red Sox team is awesome. They are fun. They didn't have the greatest showing on the West Coast, but they will return home to the final series before the All-Star break. But I want to kind of break down the game that we saw earlier this afternoon. You heard here on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEI Red Sox Radio Network. It was the Red Sox losing the game. Final score 5-4 from Anaheim. The Red Sox dropped 2 of 3. But a guy that Lou Maloney's been very high on has been Eduardo Rodriguez. And his ERA is in the fives, and it's not pretty statistically. It's not very, you know, aesthetic. It's he's been kind of beat up in terms of he's easing himself in because he didn't really have his velocity at all to start the season. And it's slowly been ramping up in the last few starts. We're starting to see him hit 94, 95 early on in the pitching outing. And Lou's been very, very high on Erod as a guy that you should be buying stock in. And Alex Cora, of course, post game, he was talking about the, if you watch the game, there was a ton of soft singles. I believe Lou Maloney actually tweeted it out, like the first five hits off Erod rolling like the 50 to 70 mile per hour exit velocity range, which is a little dinks and dunks, little bloopers. It's not really indicative of a guy who was being hit hard. It wasn't. He was pitching well, and the results really weren't showing it. So Alex Cora postgame was talking about the nature of the game being you're going to give up those soft singles despite how well you are pitching.
I mean, he threw the ball well. There was a lot of soft contact, so that's out of your control. I know he was disappointed, you know, and upset that was happening, but that's the nature of the ball game, the nature of the game, you know. Try to make contact and hopefully good things happen, and it happened enough to him, to them, the last 2 days. Stuff-wise, he was really good. Those two pitches, I bet he wants them back. You know, he had Ohtani and two strikes, he just hung that changeup. He's been attacking him that way since 2018. with good results. So, and the other one, it was just a back cutter that stays middle, and the kid didn't miss it. So overall, I mean, yeah, we don't like the result, but stuff was good and he makes some good pitches.
So the lazy take you're going to hear on EEI here from callers, texters, maybe even some hosts in the station is that Erod stinks. You know, the numbers aren't good. A 5.52 ERA, five innings pitched, nine hits, four earned runs, just five Ks. He gave up two bombs. Of course, we'll get to that middle of the fourth and fifth inning. That was the game-changing point. And I'll get to that later this segment. But the numbers aren't really all that pretty for Erod. But if you actually watch the pitch-by-pitch, batter-by-batter, like, I wouldn't really break down the tape, but if you just watch the game, you can tell that the velocity is up. The movement on this stuff is up. He's actually hitting his spots. And the times that he didn't, the Angels made him pay. Walsh hit a bomb off him. You heard Alex in that last cut talk about Ohtani hitting a bomb off him. So Erod's pitching well, but the one or two mistakes, the opponents have been hammering it and really been hammering it to the point, to the tune of home runs all season long. First pitch strikes from Erod, 16 of 24. He was good. He had 87 pitches, 62 strikes. So Erod is not a guy I'm ready to give up on. I mean, I think I even heard Lou Maloney in the pregame with Will Fleming on the Shaw's and Star Market WEI Red Sox Radio Network say if game one, the playoffs started tomorrow, Erod would be his game one starter. I believe that was what he was saying. And that shows you how much belief that, of course, Lou has in him. But you can hear pretty much in every post game or in any appearance on OMF on WEI 2-6 with Alex Cora that he actually believes that Erod is trending up despite these results. So last cut here from Alex Cora, he was talking about the trending up from Erod, and it's been something for the last 3 to 4 outings that he's actually been noticing.
You feel like he's trending upward, kind of going into the second half?
Oh, he's been amazing the last 3 or 4. You know, stuff-wise, he's where he has to be. He keeps making pitches. The fastball actually halfway through the game, kind of like start playing. Kind of like he's like, well, if you're gonna make contact down there, let me elevate. You did a good job, so he's in a good spot.
So that's Alex Cora post game talking about the left-hander Erod. He's in a good spot going forward. I want to go back to some of what it was actually really just one caller to Brian Barrett. One caller to Brian Barrett was talking about, he was complaining about the bottom of the lineup, specifically Bobby Dalbec. And of course, a lot of callers to the station or texters or even columnists in this market have been talking about first base being a hole. And I actually saw Jim Bowden, former Nationals GM on The Athletic, predicting that, you know, they go get a guy like Joey Gallo to play first base or CJ Cron from the Rockies or as Dribble Cabrera. Those are three names, which I actually throw out to Chris Cotillo of Mass Live, who joins me at 10:30 coming up here on WEI Late Night. What is that name at first base that everyone wants? Because everyone notices a hole there. And, of course, the Red Sox are trying out Franchi Cordero at first base. He actually, I believe, made his professional debut at first base tonight with the Worcester Red Sox. So it'll be interesting to see what they actually do at the deadline in terms of that first base move, or do they add an arm? They're not adding a Max Scherzer. They're not adding, you know, an ace from a team that's bottoming out right now. Like, they're not adding a guy from the Braves if they continue to blow up. It's not happening. They're not going to go get a guy from the Cubs or they're not adding a big name pitcher at all. They're adding small, minor utility guys, basically guys that he brought in, like, you know, Marwin Gonzalez, who really hasn't produced at all and now is down with an injury. And guys like Danny Santana, who can play across the field in any position, but he is also not produced, and he is also hurt. So the reason Alex Cora addressed the post game was that Marwin Gonzalez and Danny Santana were not replaced on the roster, and he was asked, why didn't you do that? Because you kind of did have a small roster and a small bench with just Connor Wong. So he was asked about a post game.
Well, he's been like that the last 2.5 weeks. So you've seen the results. You know, we're playing better baseball. He's part of the equation. We knew coming into the season that he was a big part of it. So I'm glad that he's healthy. I'm glad that he's throwing the ball well. And, you know, we counted on him in the second part of the season.
So that's Alex Cora postgame talking about Erod, of course, and he's trending upwards, and everyone's buying that. But the short bench today was a big talking point because he really only had one guy to turn to. So you're forced to play Bobby Dalbec, a guy that people do not like. So Brian DeFelice, this is postgame cut number 4. He was asked about the short roster and kind of why they didn't really make a move, because he actually sees that both guys are returning to Fenway and they're going to kind of figure out tomorrow what really the injury status is.
Obviously, no move pregame. So what happened there? Kalecki not ready or...
We felt like both guys are progressing. Actually, both of them in an emergency that were going to be available. So we stay away from them. I mean, we didn't use them, but we didn't feel we needed to make a move.
So both of them will avoid the IL, I guess, then?
We'll see. Tomorrow they go to Fenway and get treatment, and we'll go from there.
I really have no use in watching Danny Santana play professional baseball anymore. I just don't think he's all that great. The weird thing about watching him at the plate is I never feel like he has a full swing. He has like these half or three-quarter swings. And, of course, he had a home run at Fenway Park to right center field, what, a week or two ago? That really came out of nowhere. And I believe the opposing broadcaster was like, yeah, the little man, Danny Santana, hitting a home run. And he didn't even get like his full power into it because he didn't have a full swing. So I'm good on Danny Santana. I think I'd probably give Marwin Gonzalez a little bit more of a leash, because he is Alex Cora's guy and has battled some injuries, and he's a vet who's actually had a better track record of success in his career than Danny Santana has. So those are two question marks going forward, and of course the deadline is the big question mark. But I want to go back to something in the middle of this game which really kind of caused it. It really was the difference. It was a one run difference at the end of the game, 5-4 the final score from Anaheim. It was Christian Vasquez and his base running error. So if you go back and think about it, it was first and third, one out, Bobby Dalbec at the plate, and he hit an absolute bomb. And if you were listening to the broadcast with Will Fleming and Lou Maloney, these guys were jacked up about it. Of course, they're 1,000 miles away at Fenway Park calling the game off monitors, which that's still ridiculous to me that Major League Baseball won't allow road broadcasters to actually travel. But we'll get to that maybe later. But if you heard the broadcast, it was Lou and Will absolutely excited about what happened on that play, because Bobby Dalbec hit an absolute bomb and it somehow stayed in the yard. So it became a long single, which the outfielder who was playing left field for the Angels really didn't have a good path to the ball. He was kind of like running in a figure. It was weird. He had a weird path to it. Didn't really, if you watched it, you could tell that he didn't know where it was going. It ended up going off the wall and stayed in for a very long single because Christian Vasquez decided to tag up, or at least anticipate a potential tag up situation. But the problem with that is if you're going to do that on a long fly ball to left field, you probably should be standing on second or a few feet closer to first, more than like 90% of the way in the base path, than staying very close to first and just hugging the bag in case he catches it, because you have such a long chance to run back and beat the ball from a guy who's throwing it from the left field fence. So it was a base running error from Christian Vasquez who ended up costing them, because Alex Verdugo had a bloop single that scored Vasquez, but not Bobby Dalbec, because Dalbec only got a single on that play. So Bobby didn't score after JD flew out to the end of the fifth inning, and the Red Sox basically cost themselves a run there. So in the bottom half of the fifth inning, Erod throws a changeup, middle in, of course, that Shohei Ohtani hit an absolute mile, which that was his 32nd homer of the year. And that is a new home run record for a Japanese-born player. He still has 76 games left, so it's absolutely unbelievable what he's been able to do. And then he threw, on the next pitch, threw a hanging cutter to Walsh, who absolutely skied that ball to right field, and that was a no-doubter. So the Red Sox, that felt like where the game fell apart. They cost themselves a run, and then Erod made his two mistakes, which you heard from Alex Cora say that was really the difference in the game. He pitched well, but those two mistakes, the home runs, were what killed them. And that's absolutely true. And Christian Arroyo, there was another part of the game that really, really bothered me. And it wasn't really the fault of Christian Arroyo. It was the fault of the umpires in Major League Baseball. So Christian Arroyo was called out on a double play in the sixth, despite no tagging on the force play. Just the Major League Baseball umpires seem to kind of just automatically call a guy out in a double play ball if you come anywhere close to the bag. And Lou's talked about this on OMF and on the Sox broadcast, that the umpire is just kind of, it's a graceful like acceptance that you don't have to touch the bag. As long as you're within like 6 inches, the umpires will call you out on the force play. It really makes no sense, because if you're going to go to the replay and see that the foot didn't touch the bag from the center field and left field angle, you could tell the shortstop from the Angels did not do that, and they still stuck with the call of being out Christian Arroyo, which ended the sixth inning threat from the Red Sox. So that middle of the game, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth, was very confusing to me, because the Red Sox, the base running errors, the pitching mistakes by Erod, it's not really confusing. It's Major League Baseball hitters. Of course, Ohtani's going to murder any mistake that you make, and Walsh is a good left-handed power hitter as well, so those two guys will murder any mistake that you made, and Erod made them. But then the Major League Baseball umpires reviewing the play, seeing that backwards angle of the shortstop not touching second base for the force play and still calling out Christian Arroyo, who, by the way, immediately looked over the Red Sox bench and kind of gave the review signal. So he could tell in the exact same moment that the force play wasn't executed because he didn't touch the bag. So Cora postgame was talking about, we don't need to play this cut here, Brian, but he did say, I didn't agree with that call, and he was surprised that it wasn't overturned because any human who knows baseball and can see that the foot never touched second, you have to overturn it. That is the basis of overturning a play. It's clear and it's obvious, and the call was wrong. So what is the point of replay if we can't get this damn thing right? It really makes no sense to me. I want to get to a couple more things here, Red Sox related, and actually kind of get more towards the opponents of this last series. It was obviously the Angels, and no Anthony Rendon, no Mike Trout, no big name guys. So they do have one big name guy left, and people are starting to learn the name Jared Walsh, but everyone knows Shohei Ohtani. And I want to get to a point that I've kind of been hammering the last week or so, and I didn't really realize it until my actions match what I did as a child. And where I'm going with this is I kind of believe that Shohei Ohtani, in terms of stardom and must-watch appeal, is Barry Bonds 2.0. And what I mean by that is no matter what you are doing, you will find out when the Angels play. So it's usually 9, 10 o'clock, first pitch here on the East Coast, 6 on the West. And you try and figure out, when is Ohtani going to be batting? And this should be something that ESPN and Major League Baseball Network, what they should do, because this is the territory we're getting to now, is that Shohei Ohtani is so damn interesting. And I wouldn't say he's polarizing, but everyone wants to see what he's doing on every single pitch. It's kind of like a cliffhanger, because even on foul balls where he doesn't even swing at, but could be a threat to hit out of the ballpark on any single pitch, the oohs, the ahs. I mean, people are doing whatever they can to see this guy. And nobody goes to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim Stadium and watches really any of their games. But the Red Sox, of course, are a big draw. And now that big draw is a hometown guy who plays there in Shohei Ohtani. And they're getting 30,000 people in the stadium to watch him every single night. And I have no problem on my laptop. I'll be watching a game on the big TV, and then my side TV, I usually have like PlayStation 4, but on my laptop, I'll always have the Angels game, and I'll keep a keen eye to it when Shohei Ohtani is hitting, because I feel like anytime I turn my back on one pitch where he's at the plate, I may miss a home run. And the last person I really had that feeling about was Barry Bonds. I felt like every single pitch that Barry Bonds got in the strike zone could be hit into McCovey Cove. He was that damn good. He was obviously juicing. He was jacked. His head was the size of my quads. It was unbelievable. Shohei Ohtani is a likable person, which it's unbelievable that Adam Ottavino, getting the final out of the game a couple nights ago, was against Shohei Ohtani, and it was Shohei's birthday. After he got him out, he looked over at Shohei and goes, "Happy birthday, bitch." It was a great line, and it made, of course, Ohtani the number one enemy of all baseball fans, and especially Ohtani fans. I mean, just go online, and people do not like Adam Ottavino right now. And I mean, it's funny because Ottavino was famous for saying that I could strike out Babe Ruth. I could strike out Babe Ruth. We're seeing a new Babe Ruth. We're seeing Babe Ruth 2.0 or Barry Bonds 2.0 in my comparison here with Shohei Ohtani. And I want to get this Joe Maddon cut here ready, Brian DeFelice. We have a break here in about 4 or 5 minutes, and we'll have a guest here, Chris Cotillo, who's actually at the entire Angels-Red Sox series from Mass Live. But this is Joe Maddon, and he was talking about Shohei Ohtani. Joe Maddon is the manager of the Los Angeles Angels, and he's been around Major League Baseball for decades. Seen stars, seen everything that you can imagine. One thing that he's never seen is a guy like Shohei Ohtani, and he knows that what he's watching every single night is an absolute star in the making. A star right now, baseball's biggest and hottest attraction. It's Shohei Ohtani, and it's a guy that he's describing as a larger-than-life concept. Here's Joe Maddon.
Back to Mr. Ruth to draw any comparisons. There's not been one name mentioned other than his to compare Shohei with or to. I think that just screams what this is all about. We all romanticize what it would have been like to watch Babe Ruth play. He pitched, really? I guess he pitched in the World Series too, right? I mean, you hear this stuff and it's a larger than life thought or concept, correct? So now we're living it. So don't underestimate what we're seeing. We always romanticize the past, and sometimes you miss what's going on right in front of your very eyes. And that's, I've been saying that all camp to the guys, don't miss it. We have a tendency in the world today to just blow by situations and things and scenery and beautiful mountains, whatever. And you miss it because you're always locked up in your own thoughts. I'm just saying, don't miss it. Because the last time when you have to compare them to somebody that existed over 100 years ago, or about 100 years ago, that's pretty impressive.
That's the comments of Joe Maddon, World Series champion, and of course with the Rays and of course with the Cubs. And he is an awesome manager, but he's seen everything, and he now knows that the guy that I have probably is the most special baseball player to come around in decades, if not entire generations, or really since Babe Ruth in terms of unique ability. So Joe Maddon absolutely raving about Shohei Ohtani, and I'll ask Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, who was at the entire series, kind of about the superstardom factor when it comes to Shohei Ohtani, because I was actually reading from Bill Plaschke, LA Times, that he is a guy, Shohei Ohtani, is actually producing baseball's best season in history. That's a wild statement to me, just to have that as the headline. Major League Baseball's best season ever right now through the halfway point is being produced by Shohei Ohtani. I don't think there's an argument against that. I don't think there's an argument against that right now. I don't know what I would say, because I don't know what the first half numbers would be like in terms of historical perspective to compare that to. But there's nobody who's doing what he's doing in terms of hitting and pitching. It's not happening. So he's a superstar in the making. And the only thing, and I pray this doesn't happen, and I may just jinx him with it, I just hope he never gets hurt, because this happens so much with talented guys who could throw 102 and also hit 115 miles per hour exit velocity. He's baseball's number one attraction, and it's a damn shame that he's out in LA with the Angels, because even with the Dodgers, it wouldn't be much better. It would be better. But the market is a problem, but being the number two team in a West Coast market like that, that is the absolute issue. Because you hear everyone talk about, oh, it's Mike Trout. If you went to a mall, like, nobody would know who he is. He basically is compared to like the number three wide receiver from the Cowboys, like in popularity, Q rating, whatever that statistic is called. But it's kind of a shame that at least, even if he is going to play in LA, that none of these shows, ESPN, MLB, even on Twitter, like the MLB account, on, you know, go to a live cut-in. Have like a Shohei Ohtani watch. Make this the number one thing in sports and force it to fans who really aren't huge baseball fans or P1s of the sport to fall in love with this. Because if you don't like what Shohei Ohtani's doing, you're just never going to get into baseball. It's not going to happen. If you don't appreciate it, you'll never appreciate it. Tyler Devitt here on WEI Late Night. I'm here until midnight. Coming up at 10:30, actually right after this upcoming break, Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, got a lot of Red Sox questions to throw his way. Coming up at 11, I'll get into Jason Tatum and Greg Popovich, as well as Bradley Beal, potentially a future Celtic. I'll get to all three of those guys, talking about their Team USA experience, which right now they're all preparing, I should say, in Las Vegas, all the superstars out there, and the Celtics' newest head coach, Ime Udoka. He's out there under the wing of Greg Popovich, the head coach of Team USA. So Tatum is there. He had some interesting comments. So did Brad Beal, talking about his big bro, Tatum. So I'll get to that at 11:10. Then at 11:30, I have John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, and he's on Twitter at Reds Army _ John, which I also found out he's now in the Odyssey family. So congrats to John, as you can get the Locked On Celtics podcast on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcast. But I'm very excited to be joined by John at 11:30. Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, joins me, Tyler Devitt, next here on WEI Late Night.
93.7 FM, WEEI.
Two balls fouled off his legs, 2-2. Swing and a drive into right field. This ball is pounded. It is way back, and the Angels lead. A changeup that was up. Ohtani did not miss it. His 32nd home run. He is something else, and it's 3-2 LA.
Number 32 home runs for a halfway point, almost for a little over the halfway point for Shohei Ohtani. That's the most home runs for a Japanese-born player. He is absolutely ridiculous, and a guy who got to see him up close and personal is Chris Cotillo, Mass Live. Chris, what's going on? Welcome to the Harbor One Hotline and WEI Late Night. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good. I'm good. So we'll get the obligatory Ohtani question out of the way. What was it like seeing him up close and personal? Because I did read from Bill Plaschke, LA Times. He said that the entire crowd, all 30,000 every single night, is like waiting on pins and needles to see every single pitch. They're oohing and aahing off balls and strikes, foul balls. What was the Ohtani experience that you had over the last couple of days?
Yeah, it was great. You know, on the first night, there were 38,000 people there, and it was packed right to the end because it was Ohtani pillow night. They handed out pillows with his face on it. Everybody wanted one. And then they actually had 10,000 fewer people last night when he actually pitched, which I thought was kind of funny. The merchandise, you know, speaks volumes. But you know, I thought the coolest moment was he came up, obviously, in that first game against Ottavino there in the ninth inning with a chance to tie it or win it. Everybody was on their feet. It felt like a playoff atmosphere. Obviously, Ottavino was fired up with his little birthday message he said to him after that. But it's a game-changing, you know, superstar moment. Alex Cora said it reminded him of, you know, Barry Bonds in his prime. And, you know, you realize that you're witnessing something special. You're witnessing greatness. To see him, you know, come up in that big spot as, you know, a dangerous hitter in the ninth and then pitch last night the way he did and then hit a homer today, we kind of got the whole experience in the last 3 days. I know the Red Sox did as well.
I was just talking about the Barry Bonds comparison. I'm not saying he is Barry Bonds in terms of hitter, but I think opposing teams, and the Red Sox probably feel this way, he is as dangerous as Barry Bonds was. You throw one mistake to him, he's hitting at 440 feet, 150 miles an hour exit velocity. Are we getting to the territory here, Chris Cotillo, that it's better to just intentionally walk Shohei Ohtani than give him anything to hit?
Yeah, I thought a really indicative and funny moment of this was Johnny Miller asked, you know, how do you possibly contain Ohtani? And Alex Cora said, well, when they came into Fenway, we did a really good job against them. He only hit two home runs in three games. I was like, all right, well, if that's the bar that we're trying to clear here, you know, that's not necessarily any other hitter. You'd be pretty upset about that. But, yeah, that's you're right. I mean, he's getting to a point where it's ridiculous. Obviously, he's got a big week ahead of him putting on a show, not just in the All-Star game, but the Home Run Derby. But, you know, everybody who's been around baseball for, you know, no matter how long they've been around, nobody's seen anything like this. And like I said, very cool to see in person.
The Red Sox 3-3 road trip took 2 of 3 from Oakland, but then when they went to the Anaheim Angels, it was 1 of 2, of course, lost today. How did you see the road trip? It was 3-3 overall, but was this a success? Was it disappointing to you? How do you see it overall?
It was 6 close games. They, you know, felt like the Patriots Super Bowls. They could have been 0-6. They could have been 6-0. So, you know, it just felt like, you know, every game was coming down to the last pitch, the last inning, which is a little difficult to be writing in real time. But, you know, they're one play away or today, you know, that double play ball, where Iglesias is ruled that he hit the bag. I don't think he did. If he doesn't, you know, Bobby Dalbec comes up with two guys in scoring position, could be a different game there. In Oakland, obviously, Matt Andrews blowing it with a 2-run lead in the 12th. So, you know, the losses, it says a lot when, you know, when they're getting beat, it's taking an absolute, you know, gigantic effort from the opponent. You know, the teams really have to, they're barely getting beat when they're not winning. So, you know, still, I think it's 10 of the last 13, 3 more games before the All-Star break, and then a big series in New York coming out of it. But, you know, they're obviously very happy with where they're at right now. And, you know, that's probably not going to change anytime soon.
Chris, were you surprised that there was not a roster move made today? Because, of course, Danny Santana, Marwin Gonzalez dealing with injuries, they were not replaced today. So, essentially, your bench was Connor Wong, and he only can really be your catcher. So, were you surprised at the lack of move, which created a short bench against the Angels today?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, based on, you know, Santana and Marwin both felt better pregame, according to Cora, and Plawecki, I guess, was not ready to be activated. I mean, it's kind of a tough situation. Pretty much in any other situation, you can call a guy up, but with a day game after a night game, 6 hours away from Worcester, 6.5 hours on a plane away from Worcester, they weren't going to be able to get anybody out here. So, you know, just one of those things over the course of a season, kind of a bad break. But I would expect there's going to be some moves on Friday. You know, I bet Plawecki will be activated. Wong will go back down to Worcester. If Santana needs to go on the IL, they have Franchi Cordero, who's available. I know fans want Jaron Duran. Not sure if that'll happen. Michael Chavis is always a guy who's coming up and down. So could see some shuffling here in the next couple of days. But, you know, it just depends on, you know, off day tomorrow. See how those guys are feeling. And then maybe a couple moves on Friday.
Quick question about Michael Chavis, the eyesores. How many damn options does he have? I feel like he's been up and down, up and down, up and down. He's on the Lou Maloney shuttle right now. It's unbelievable. I mean, how many more times can this guy go back up and down?
Unlimited for the rest of the year and for the rest of next year. So it's pretty unlimited with him, because once he came up, he basically stayed in the majors. So, you know, he's got some room, and yeah, he is the modern day Lou Maloney, and it's that's you know, that means he'll be hosting in the midday at some point.
Oh,
right?
No, Glenn will still be around. It'll be Glenn and him hosting a show somewhere 2 to 6, maybe in Glenn's attic. Let's go back.
Ordway and the Ice Horse has got a nice ring to it.
That is a great show title. Maybe a podcast on the Odyssey app coming soon. Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, joining me on WEI Late Night. Let's go back to the game today. Erod, today's starter, he took the loss. His ERA remains in the fives, but Alex Cora has been very encouraged by what he's seen. Lou Maloney's been telling everybody to buy stock in Erod because he's about to take off, but the results really haven't been there. I mean, the three previous starts before tonight have been encouraging, but the consistency really hasn't been there from start to start. What are you seeing from Erod?
Yeah, you know what? I think I still think that considering what he went through last year, considering, you know, the health problems that were so, you know, far past just baseball, the fact that he's been able to, I know he missed his first start, but the fact he's been able to pitch every 5 days is a win in and of itself for the Red Sox. I know the results haven't always been there, but still, that's a victory in and of itself. You know, early on, and Alex Cora keeps saying this, early on in the season, he was getting wins, but he wasn't pitching that well. His stuff wasn't that good. Now it's kind of, a regression to the mean the other way. He's pitching really well, and sometimes the results aren't there. So, I think it's taken him a little bit of time to knock the rust off after missing an entire year and be comfortable pushing himself physically. And, the indications in the last few outings are that he's, you know, going to be poised for a big second half today. If you look at the exit velocities of the balls in the first few innings against him, there are a lot of bloop singles and a lot of really softly hit balls. Obviously, that changed once Ohtani and Walsh put him on the freeway in, like, the fifth inning today. So, but I think, you know, overall, Erod's been trending up. And the Red Sox are kind of in a spot where they don't need Eduardo Rodriguez to be that bona fide ace that he, like, was in 2019. You know, Evaldi's stepped up, Pivetta stepped up, Martin Perez has quietly had a really good year. You have Chris Sale obviously coming back, Tanner Houck's going to factor in, and you still have Garrett Richards in whatever form that takes. So, average to above average from Eduardo Rodriguez is going to be okay. And if he can reach his ceiling, that's going to be a huge boost for the team in the second half too.
So let's get to a trade deadline question. And it seems like they're not going to be adding a Max Scherzer. Like, that's out of the question now. The rotation is what it is, and they're going to get Tanner Houck and Chris Sale back up to the big league club here in the next month or two. But what do they actually do at the deadline? Is it for a first baseman? And how much would a guy like Asdrubal Cabrera actually help this team?
Yeah, and another name there, Jesus Aguilar from Miami, I think is a pretty good fit. I mean, just a guy that can, you know, go in there and play every day. They've obviously, Dahlbeck's had a long leash. They still believe in him the way he played last year. But, he's too hot and cold for in a contending lineup. They've tried the left-handed compliments over there, whether it be Danny Santana or Marwin Gonzalez. Those guys haven't helped. You know, Cordero is now, he started at first base in Worcester today, so he's going to be an option. So I think they'll make a depth move at first base. You know, it's not necessarily, this might be a loose comp, but Steve Pearce in 2018, fitting a need. You know, they need a guy who could hit lefties and come in and play solid defense, that kind of guy. Mitch Moreland wouldn't be a bad fit, and so he's going to come back to the Red Sox every year. He's like the Major League Baseball's version of Ordway, just will never retire.
Can't kill him off.
I think when you look at the bullpen, that's obviously an area where any contender can always upgrade. You know, Matt Barnes has been great, but he's been a little bit worse in the last couple weeks, last couple months, some signs of slowing down there. Darwinson Hernandez, his ERA is still below 3, but he's a little shaky. You know, Josh Taylor can't possibly keep this up, because if he does, he'll be in the Hall of Fame by the end of the year. I think one thing they're going to do in the bullpen, give Garrett Whitlock some more high leverage situations, one-inning situations, but still, there's going to be a lot of veteran relievers out there for cheap. I think that's one area they could address. So, Chaim Bloom said last night on NBC Sports Boston, we're not too stacked where we can't add talent. I think that's a good way to put it.
Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, joining me on WEI Late Night. And you mentioned the bullpen, and there was a name that was thrown out by Buster Olney, ESPN Major League Baseball insider. He threw out talking to a source. I don't know who the source was, of course, but he mentioned the name Craig Kimbrell from the Cubs and, of course, the Braves, right, and Red Sox one time. Is that even a real possibility? And, like, what would it take to get Craig Kimbrell, and where would he actually fit in the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, giving up a lot of prospect capital for an elite closer is the move the Red Sox need to be making. They have Matt Barnes as that established guy. So I saw that, and it didn't even pass the aggregation test of writing it up. And
that's a low bar. You know,
yeah, so it was, I don't think really buy into that. Kimbrel's a guy that they saw when you get to the playoffs what he was in 2018. You know, a lot of times you can, you know, you look back at that, they won despite Craig Kimbrel's performance in 2018. So, he's not a guy that I think is going to be high on their list. I was kind of surprised to see that.
Final questions here for Chris Cotillo and Mass Live. So Franchi Cordero didn't work out as an outfielder here in Boston, but he's back in Worcester, and he was in the lineup tonight as a first baseman. Should Red Sox fans be excited that he could potentially be up here with a big league club playing first base?
Yeah, it's a possibility, and he's been like the best hitter at AAA in the whole country in the last 2 months since he got sent down. So that's very encouraging. Either he's, you know, the best AAA player ever who can't hit in the majors, or he actually made some strides. I think we'll get to find out pretty soon. But that's one of those things where if you have him come up, play first base, and be the left-handed complement to Dahlbeck, two big swing and miss guys, two power potential guys. But, you know, if he's able to step in, that's one place where the Red Sox maybe don't have to make a trade, don't have to give up prospect capital. So it's an exciting possibility. You have absolutely nothing to lose by doing it. And I'd expect, you know, give him some more reps over the next couple weeks. There's no AAA All-Star break because of the shortened season there. But so he'll continue doing that, and I would expect him to be up and factoring in the second half as well.
Chris, do you have a sense when Jaron Duran, because it's not an if question, it's a when now, but when is the when? When will he be called up behind Bloom?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of it has to do with, do you want Jaron Duran to come up here and be a fourth outfielder and just sit on the bench? And, you know, the way Kike Hernandez has been playing really well lately, you're not going to replace Verdugo or Renfro in the outfield. So, you know, to me, if Kike kept struggling, I think that would have forced the issue a little bit. How well he's been playing has kind of delayed it. You don't want him to come up here and sit.
Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, I appreciate your time, man. It was fun. We'll catch up again soon. And thanks for coming on. And where would you actually, I was reading your MLB stadium rankings just before you came on. Where would you put Angel Stadium?
That's tough. Probably in the 10 to 15 range. It was cool. It's good, you know, kind of the old time feel, but you know, it docked some points for some people trying to come out just for a pillow and not for the actual guy on the mound.
That press box location, by the way, was so odd. You're like in the right field line. So awkward.
Yeah, no, we got moved after day one because of that. So that was good.
Oh, okay. Did the Twitter picture cause that?
I don't know. There were some talks. There were some negotiations.
Chris Cotillo, Mass Live. Appreciate your time, man. Be well.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right, that is Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, did the first 45 minutes of Red Sox, so we'll take your calls here. Got a few minutes before the break. 617-779-7937. I want to ask Brian DeFelice on the other side of the glass a quick question here. I mentioned that the Ohtani factor for me is getting to the Barry Bonds territory. You heard Chris Cotillo throw that out himself. Alex Cora has been saying it. Is he getting to that territory for you, that what he does on a nightly basis, you're going to try and go out of your way to go watch it?
I think so. I think he's captivating. I think, you know, it's not oftentimes that, rarely ever, actually, in this day and age, you see a player that can, you know, pitch the way he does and hit the way he does and just play baseball all around the way he does.
Yeah, he's an incredible player, and he's the undoubted star of the Angels. And I actually heard someone, maybe it was Lou, I'm trying to figure out who was saying it, it might have been Brian Barrett, say that Rafael Devers is like the most dangerous hitter in this Red Sox lineup. And he said it with such conviction that it was like almost no debate. And I feel like we almost forget how damn good Xander Bogaerts is as a hitter. You throw him a mistake, he's going to hit it a mile. I almost would fear JD Martinez more so than Rafael Devers, because JD's obviously experienced. We quickly forget the struggles of Rafael Devers in hitting fastballs. He missed like 40 or 50 fastballs in a row like not too long ago. And now that seems way behind him, and he's red hot, and he will mash any, you know, mistake that's middle in, he'll hit it 450 feet. But I appreciate Chris Cotillo for coming on. And I want to take a quick break here because I want to get to this long segment where I have a bunch of Celtics sound to get to. It's Jason Tatum talking to Team USA in the media. It's Greg Popovich talking about Jason Tatum. And then, of course, it's Tatum's big bro, Bradley Beal, talking about potentially talking about teaming up with other players. That's in Vegas, and that is ongoing right now. This is WEI Late Night. I'm here until midnight. I'm Tyler Devitt. We'll take in your calls at 617-779-7937.
93.7 FM. WEEI.
Tyler Devitt back here on WEI Late Night. I had to see the crowd going wild in Tampa. Did it just go final? Tampa Bay Lightning, the Stanley Cup champions. Wow. Congrats to them. Mayor Jane Caster, Tampa, got her wish. Said, please lose game four so we could celebrate here in Tampa. Tampa Bay is like title town now. It's unbelievable. They have the Super Bowl parade, which Tom Brady will tell you until the end of time was the greatest parade in the history of parades. It was so warm down here. It was so warm. You just don't get that in Boston. And we had snow and rain and sleet, and we had to walk uphill both ways. It was awful. And Now you're in another parade in Tampa in the next week or two, another boat parade. So congrats to the Tampa Bay Lightning, Stanley Cup champions. Brian, were you rooting for anyone in this series? Because I've been made aware that rooting for Montreal in this series was like a sin.
Honestly, I was rooting for the Canadiens, at least to make it a series. Tampa's had it too easy the last few years. Dallas was nothing. Montreal was nothing. I actually just saw a Bruins jersey in the front row cheering.
Did you really? Wow. I wonder who that is. Is that Fitzy there at Tampa? Did he fly down? Is he staying down in Tampa still? So
probably, but as a Bruins fan, it's the lesser of two evils, right? Probably Tampa.
Yeah, that seems like they might be a legit dynasty. Like, they are so damn good, and I don't... The Bruins window may be, what, one and done? They might have one last real run at a championship next year because, of course, you have Swayman taking over until Tuukka gets back from the torn labrum. But, Brian, do you think the window is shut for the Bruins? You're a big hockey guy. Do they have one last chance here at a run?
Yeah, it's not shut just yet. You got a year, two tops, as long as you have Bergeron. Although, I will say, Tyler, a lot of people are saying Swayman's going to start in Providence next year, which I don't get at all.
How does that make any sense? So, would you start Halak?
No, I'd start. No, they would bring in another veteran goalie. They wouldn't bring Halak back, is what they're saying. But I would bring Swayman back.
He deserves
right
a shot. If you're going to play him in the playoffs, and he played pretty well, I think he deserves a shot here to fill the spot until Tuukka Rask is healthy. I want to finish up a few more baseball related things and an appearance on NBC Sports Boston. The Red Sox chief baseball officer Chaim Bloom made an appearance with Tom Giles, Lou Maloney. I believe John Tomasi was also a part of this interview. And they talked about Chris Sale, and I didn't really think this was actually a big sticking point because I guess there were some people that said, oh, when you bring him back, maybe slow him into the role, ease him into it, build him up. Well, he's being built up as a starter in the minors when he does this rehab assignment, and he's being built up now by doing these live BP sessions. He's being built up as a starter because that's who Chris Sale is. He's a dominant left-handed starter who will give you 5, 6, 7 damn good innings. And he's not the guy who's going to throw 101 and have a nasty slider anymore. He's probably going to throw 95, 96. That's what he was throwing when Alex Cora came on OMF right after his bullpen session where Christian Arroyo said that he looked damn good. So the excitement is there for Chris Sale, but this is Chaim Bloom talking about his presumed ace who will be returning to the Red Sox team pretty soon.
He's just about at the stage where we can really start planning some outings, which is a great place to be. Obviously, we've been waiting for this for a long time. So we're in the process of mapping this out now and getting him on a regular routine and building him up. And then, you know, hopefully at some point we're ready to activate him and fit him into our rotation. We're not going to have trouble finding a spot for Chris Sale. Now, if we're still in a position like we are now where, you know, the good fortune and then the good work we've had with our health is continuing, then we have a tough decision on our hands. That's okay.
So you did say rotation. So you guys would plan on starting him at this point?
Yeah, we're going to build him up as a starter. You know, that's obviously who he is. That's what he's been. I think it makes sense to keep him in that schedule. Now, look, as we get deeper, you know, into the season, you know, there might be, you know, obviously some creativity that's warranted as we get deeper and deeper if we're headed where we want to be headed. But we're going to build him up as a starter. And, you know, that's what he's been doing basically his whole career.
Yeah, no surprise to me there with those comments. And I know, like, Lou kind of treated it as this is a big deal. It's the first time he's really said this. Well, was there really a discussion that Chris Sale would be brought back in any other role? I know in the World Series he was coming out of the bullpen when necessary, and he could still do that if they get deep in the playoffs and that becomes the approach that Alex Cora wants. But right now it's going to be Sale, Eovaldi, Pivetta, Erod in some sort of order. Of course, Sale at the number one position, probably Eovaldi at two, and then Pivetta and Erod in some other order. You're not going to see Garrett Richards throw a single pitch in the playoffs as a starting pitcher. You shouldn't. It shouldn't happen. There's so much time off in between. There's enough time to make this a four-man rotation in the playoffs, and that's a damn good four-headed monster in Sale, Eovaldi, Pivetta, and Erod. So you're not going to see Martin Perez, who's been good. He's been very good this year. He will tell you, we effing good. I love that line. I tweeted out after every Red Sox win from the OMF account. So you're not going to see Perez, and you're definitely not going to see Garrett Richards, who is trying to recreate being a pro pitcher, like on the fly, on the toughest level of baseball to accomplish that. So that's tough at all. The next cut from Chaim Bloom, he was talking about the approach to the trade deadline, which is upcoming here in just a few weeks. And he knows that this team is damn good, like Martin Perez will tell you, but they are not that good to the point where they don't have to make a move and they can just sit on their hands.
We're obviously pleased with the depth that we've been able to build, but you guys have heard me say it before. I don't think you ever have enough, and I certainly don't think we're at that point where we have enough right now. We're having a very good year. Obviously, we got a lot of talent on our roster. We're not so stacked that there isn't going to be room for talented major league players. The fact that there is just now one deadline makes that depth even more important, because if something happens to you in August or September, and especially in August, there's no mechanism now to go out and add at that point. So you're going to have to rely on what you have. And that means, you need to build up that depth. So for me, I don't view it as a problem if we have guys who could be contributing in Boston that are instead contributing in Worcester, because I think by the time the season ends, likelier than not, we're going to be needing every single one of them and then some. And so we're going to keep trying to add to that pool again, as long as it makes sense, as long as the acquisition costs make sense. We always have to be on the lookout for opportunities to add.
So I was talking with Chris Cotillo of Mass Live about potential moves, and we were, of course, talking about the first baseman. That could be where they go at the trade deadline. They're not going to bring Craig Kimbrell back here. It's not happening. I know Buster only threw that out there, and we talked about it with Chris. That's just not really going to happen, because you have to go a pretty good prospect to get Kimbrell back from the Cubs, and he would not even really be your closer. I mean, Matt Barnes has been damn good enough to the point where I'm not removing him for really anyone that I'm trading for. I'm actually reading a story here from Jen McCaffrey, who threw out five names. She's from The Athletic, and she threw out left-handed pitcher Ross Detweiler, right-hander Ian Kennedy, left-hander Taylor Rogers. Let's see who else here. Richard Rodriguez, who's been Bradfo's pick, the Pirates closer, who has a 2.51 ERA, 0.8 whip, which is damn good. Some other names here. Daniel Bard. That is one that Jim McCaffrey wants to bring back, or at least throws out. And I actually saw that Bradfo wrote about it. And he was a guy that was here and has had a resurgence after like a half dozen years, and now is killing it out in Colorado in a very tough place to pitch. So, I mean, all these names that Jim McCaffrey is throwing out, the five names, they're not sexy names. I mean, Richard Rodriguez is the closer for the Pirates. Bard is two for the Rockies. But those guys aren't going to cost you a whole lot to get back. I mean, they're not the dominant huge names like a Craig Kimbrell. Taylor Rogers is a good guy. Like it says here from Jim McCaffrey, if the Red Sox were to pursue Rogers, it would be with an eye towards the future. Matt Barnes is a season and ascend to be their closer for next year. So it would be a long-term project, not a project, but a long-term move, I should say, to have Rogers replacing Barnes, not this year, but next year. The 30-year-old is under contract through 2022 and making $6 million in arbitration this year. Rogers with a 2.52 ERA, 2.04 WHIP, 2.04 FIP, and a 1.06 WHIP with an impressive 12.5 Ks per nine over 34 appearances. The Twins are an absolute dumpster fire. They have nobody good on their team besides Josh Donaldson and really Taylor Rogers. Like, they're not a good team, so they should be selling out any valuable pieces they have. That's not a guy that, you know, I would be opposed to the Red Sox trading a low-level prospect, a guy in single A or double A. I'm not trading away a Tristan Casas or a Jaron Duran. Like, those guys are completely untouchable unless you're giving me Max Scherzer, which even then, like, I'm not really 100% sure that's the correct move to make. But you're not getting a sexy name here with the Red Sox at the trade deadline. You're not getting a Joey Gallo, a CJ Cron. You're not getting huge power-hating first baseman or a big name like Craig Kimbrell. I'm Tyler Devitt. It's 11 o'clock here on WEI Late Night. I'm here until midnight. We'll take your calls at 617-779-7937 or the text line, which I'm actually reading some of these texts, at 37937. Star in the making like Tyler in the sports talk radio industry. Thank you, Mom, for that text. I appreciate that. The Sox lost out to soccer. Soccer beat out the Sox. That sounds like a text that came from Michael Felger. I'm not even going to address that because it's stupid. It's two completely different points in the season. It's the Red Sox are in a regular season West Coast game where soccer is the world sport, and this is one of the most important events yearly. It doesn't make sense that we would make that comparison. People are comparing it to the NBA Finals, which also makes no sense at all. That's a championship round versus a regular season West Coast game. So we'll take your text at 37937, your calls at 617-779-7937. Tyler Devitt here till midnight. John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, 1130. We're back after this.